There's a thousand pretty women living out there. They're all living the devil may care. Well, I'm just a devil with a lot of despair. So viva Las Vegas!
Thank you, Wayne Newton, for that fabulous intro. You're listening to Cats with the Dish. I'm John Katsalamidis. I write the Cats Report in the Las Vegas Sun. You better believe it. Print and online. And I write for all the titles in Greenspun Media Group. Look for my interview with Jimmy Kimmel in the upcoming Vegas Magazine cover story. Big shot, am I? Dish isn't with us this week. She's in our Montana bureau. But I am joined this week by my dear friend and consummate performer, Clint Holmes. Clint, thanks for joining us and me.
Am I actually sitting where the Dish normally
You are
sits?
Sitting in the hot seat, my friend.
Oh, man, I feel more feminine already.
Mm-hmm. You're getting blonder by the moment.
Yes, indeed. Good to see you, Cats.
Thanks for coming down. It's always terrific to talk to you in any forum context and on any subject. Today we're going to talk about cabaret jazz.
Okay.
First of all, let's deal with this show you're going to be doing. It's tonight, Saturday night, and Sunday.
Yes.
Day, yeah. 2 o'clock on Sunday.
And yes, the idea of this particular show was, hey, why don't I just ask people who come to see me anyway to request a song or two, something they've heard me sing that they'd like to hear or something they've never heard me sing that they'd like to hear. And the response has actually been great. I was anticipating like four people, you know, and you know what I
you
mean?
Put this out there on social media and the Smith Center put it on our Facebook page.
We've had in the vicinity now of about 300 or so, you know, like that. Unfortunately, the last 100 came in this morning.
and they're loaded with great options and you will never be able to rehearse.
And we're just not in time. So I actually think we'll do it again. Maybe take, you know, what we have and with a little more time. And because, I, you know, it's instant arrangement time to do these things.
Uh-huh.
You
know, I know. And Jeff Nieman.
Yeah,
who,
Jeff Nieman.
Jeff Nieman, who does your arrangements, is under the. It's a lot of pressure.
It's
on
a lot
both
of pressure,
you guys to do this,
and in particular for him. I mean, I'm going to make an excuse and read lyrics this weekend because, you know, I mean, I'm. You know, you can't really remember all those songs, but those guys, they have to arrange it, they have to rehearse it. It's a whole thing. So anyway, but it's been fun, and I actually have found some stuff I never would have found, and that's the intriguing part of doing it later because you, John Katsalamidis, introduced me to the most bizarre songs and I have to, listen more.
I don't think my songs are bizarre. I think they're just songs that you haven't sung.
That's right.
And some of them are bizarre.
Yes.
And in print, I have done this. I have thrown up some titles into my column.
And I love that.
Sex Farm by Spinal
Tap. There we are. And there we are. And so whether they're bizarre or not or just my ignorance, that can be fixed with a couple of months' notice.
Well, I think that, you know, you mentioned something that I've wanted to ask you about anyway, and that's when vocalists read lyrics.
Yeah.
They try not to do that.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, you want to, every singer I know always tries to. And yet I see the performers up there reading music. And why is there a difference in, you know, between, you know, someone like Jeff or, you know, Keith or anybody else, Wiedemeyer on guitar,
yeah.
You know, and it's hard to sight read music and play it effectively.
Yeah.
You know, there's no question about that. But why is it different for a singer to go up there and not be, you know, sort of accepted as somebody who reads from a crib sheet on stage?
I think probably, that's actually a great question, but I think the answer
that's
has
my only great question.
Okay. Well, then I'll make this
make
a really
count,
long answer. I think it's probably because it's up to the singer to connect to the audience and a lyric sheet between he or she and the audience is an obstruction. Whereas, you know, musicians are playing the music in general.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you go see a band, you're not going to see guys reading music. I mean, the Rolling Stones aren't reading music. You know,
right.
I mean, they're playing the
correct
repertoire. They know it. They rehearse it forever and they do it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in my case, I know Jeff and the guys make an effort to know the stuff and get off book, as they say, if they can. But I think the reason that a singer, you know, is more obligated to be off book is because we are the ones who connect directly to the audience. You know?
Right. And so, you're the guy, and you are the definitely the headliner, the center figure.
Right.
And like when you were at Harrah's, that was, you were always, it would never been the case.
I never, ever, no, never. Well, because I had a lot of time to rehearse.
Yeah.
You know, we changed the show a lot, but we'd rehearse for 2 weeks before we'd put a new number
in.
You
wouldn't put a number in until it was like,
until it was ready.
Everybody knew it.
Part of the thing at Cabaret Jazz, as you know, is that we have promised to do at least a partially new show every month. Wow. I mean, that's a lot, you know, it's a lot.
Seemed like a good idea at the time.
And I think it has been, but yeah. I do take that the option to read occasionally, to read lyrics occasionally.
Now, how binding is that idea, by the way, of doing a new show each time out? I mean, that's a self-inflicted
wound
thing that you and Jeff have done, or yeah. You have done. I mean, is it something that the officials at the Smith Center also expect, not only, and forget about your fans, but just...
Yeah, I think that... so. I think Myron and Paul and Glenn do, because we are drawing from the same pool. I mean, it's not like tourists come in and it changes every, you know, it's all locals, you know, so, and a lot of the locals, you know, come back, which is wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know there are people who come back like every Friday, every first Friday, mm-hmm. they do that, right?
Right.
So, yeah, I think it's an obligation to them. I don't think they'd come back every weekend, if every month, if the show was exactly the same every month.
Right. So, and it's, it keeps things interesting for you because you're so versatile anyway.
I've learned
it's just a little extra.
I have learned so much. You know, I mean, so many songs, some of which have found their way into a semi-permanent repertoire. You know, some of them are just kind of, that was fun to do,
mm-hmm.
next. And then once in a while, we'll hit on one that is like, oh man, this is kind of gold.
Give me an example of one of those.
Well, Hallelujah. The first time we did mm-hmm. Hallelujah, it was mm-hmm. because a bunch of people requested it. And I heard a couple of versions of it. And I said, well, this would be fun to do. And then as I found my way through it, really examined the song and made it personal, you know, found my mm-hmm. own story mm-hmm. within the song, it became a special piece of material that is, you know, for me, a song I do everywhere now, you know.
Right.
I can probably think of others too, but there have been some of the Beatles stuff that Since I Fell in Love with You.
Mm-hmm.
That tune is a tune I now do whenever I get a chance to, and that was put in for the Beatles weekend.
Yeah, you know? It was the Beatles Baccarat,
which we're going to do that again. I love that show.
And was Broadway into that thing, or was it just...
started that way, but then I took it out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Right after Jeff
wrote, a lot to work with already.
Right after Jeff wrote a whole Broadway medley, I said, "Oh no, we're not doing that." You know, right.
I was talking to Wiedemeyer about that particular show. You know, I think before and after it, and we were trying to knock our heads together with an entire Beatles show just for Clint Holmes, like come
Let's
up with a
it.
Set list. Because I hadn't heard you sing any of those. I mean, you sang a medley that had "Hard Day's Night" and "I Am the Walrus."
Yeah, that's Jeff's imagination. Yeah,
yeah,
references of all sorts of things, and I love that show. And we are going to do that, and we're going to add. So I will accept your
I'll keep it in the
ideas.
Fairway this time, because there are some, as you, we maybe it's a surprise. There are some obscure Beatles songs too. But have any at any point in your career have you done the type of gig where people can just call out requests and you sing them? I mean, I see this at like dueling pianos, bars, and things like that.
I've never done a gig that was supposed to be that, but I've certainly had people. You know, yell out songs, absolutely, and it's kind of fun because if it's well into the show and I'm feeling, you know, really comfortable that everybody's very satisfied at that point with the show, I'll say, yeah, let's try it, you know,
mm-hmm.
and it can be fun. But no, I've never done. Here's something I want to do, and I might do it this weekend. I've actually thought about it. I want to do. A friend of mine named Ann Hampton Calloway does a thing where she'll say, okay, somebody give me a color, somebody give me a city, and then she'll ad lib a song based on the information that the audience gives her.
It's like Mad Libs.
Yeah, and she's very clever and witty.
Wayne Brady
funny.
Does that too.
I'm sure.
You've seen,
I'm sure.
Would be an interesting show. Have you seen Wayne Brady before?
I love Wayne Brady.
Yeah, yeah, at the Mirage.
Yep.
Yeah,
yep.
He does that too.
He surprised me. I mean, I knew how talented he was, but mm-hmm. but I guess I didn't know how talented he was. I knew he was talented.
Yeah,
but
he takes that on the fly and creates a song out of it and
right.
then sings it in somebody else's voice.
Oh,
and does
wow.
it and comedic form.
Well, see, that's not
all
fair.
At once. It's not fair to anybody.
but
he does that very thing too.
Well, and somebody, I was talking to somebody about it, and they said that a fun way to do it would be someone to yell out a song title. Just make, you know, my mother loves Michael Jordan tennis shoes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're gonna write that song now. You know what I mean?
Right.
So something. You know, mm-hmm. We'll see. I might try that this weekend. And I guess the form would be where you'd say, okay, we're gonna do a blues. So guys, play a blues, and I will write this song within that
right.
context.
But we're talking about this, a variation of what Nashville Unplugged is at the Red Rock Resort that they do regularly over there on Friday nights. I think it's monthly.
Maybe that's somebody.
That was, and what they do is it's a given that it's a country genre.
Right.
And then they take song titles up at the front of the stage, and then, you know.
And they draw them out of a hat or something, right?
And then the story when I wrote it was, as we were talking about, was Drinking Stupid Away.
That's it.
Was the title. Yeah. And they work it. It's the two dedicated songwriters and then two guests or one or two guests. And they build a song out of it that night. Yeah. They play the song and then that song dies up and goes away.
See, that person.
So
that,
if you were to change it to R&B or whatever,
or
jazz
or whatever. Uh-huh.
You would have that.
I would have that. And it would be fun. And I think, you know, when you do something like that, the audience is so with you. Mm-hmm. They want it to work. So if it's a little less than clever, they're still going to, it'll still be fun, you know, but it's definitely walking out there.
Yeah.
You know, walking out there on that limb, but that's fine. I like to
it
do
is
that anyway.
Walking out there. Yeah. It would be fun to watch.
Yeah.
You're listening to Cats with the Dish. This is John Katsalamidis, missing my co-host, Tricia McCrone, who's in Montana next week. I keep saying next
you
week.
Miss
Trish,
her. I miss her.
I know. We all miss her. Trish, Flathead Lake is no place to live. We will have her back next week, and I'm flying solo, not quite though. I'm with Clint Holmes, who's going to be at the Cabaret Jazz Room at Smith Center tonight, Saturday night, and Sunday matinee. The show times tonight and
8:30 tonight, 8:30 tomorrow night, and 2:00 in the afternoon on Sunday.
And we're talking about his upcoming shows, which is a variation of it's a request line with Clint Holmes. He's taken requests 300 or so,
say. That's kind of nice. That makes me feel pretty good.
Wow. So you have songs.
So we'll be doing a longish show.
It'll be one medley. What did you do at the Smith Center at the Reynolds Hall where you did the medley of all the songs in
West Side Story.
In West Side Story.
That's a great idea. Okay, here are the top 10 requests.
But you actually did that.
Yeah.
I thought you were kidding, and then you pulled it off.
Yeah, well, that's something that...
That was when all the tourism journalists were in town a few months ago, right?
That's right.
Yeah, I thought you were kidding about that, but you did a segment of every song in West Side
Story
in 2 and a half.
I said we're going to do the whole show in 4 minutes, yeah.
Yeah, 4 minutes.
Yeah, and we kind of did.
I was sitting there, I was with my buddy Andy Walmsley, and we kind of laughed when you started in, and I said, yeah, fat chance, and near the end, I'm like, he actually did do that.
Well, that music is... phenomenal. Mm-hmm. That's just great.
Standing
music.
Ovation from some very jaded people.
That was nice.
It was really cool.
That's when Oscar Goodman decided that I should play him in his Broadway show.
He told
show.
Me that after yes. the show. So how's that working
well,
out?
Well, I mean, we're kind of twins.
Except you're not. Would you do something like that? I mean, I don't think I've ever really formally asked you. Would you do that? Oscar Goodman, the backstory is Oscar Goodman wants to have a musical done or play done on his life. And
exactly.
He wants you to play him.
And wants me to play him. Well, we're both black. Uh-huh. So there's a good start.
Obviously.
Yeah, obviously. Mm-hmm. I mean, I represented the mob myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're a made guy.
But I'm a man. Occasionally.
Self-made guy.
You know what? Seriously, in theater, there's makeup and there's hair and there's stuff. Depending on what it was, if Oscar was serious, I mean, first of all, you know, how nice of him to say that, you know.
He said it since then, by the way. He said it at the roast.
So, yeah, he did.
Uh-huh.
So, I would, I absolutely. I mean, it would be fun. Look. I'm an actor. You know, when you're an actor, you can morph. I morph into things.
We got to get a list of quotes, Goodman quotes, and just have you start reading them. Like
that's a great
randomly
that's,
during your shows.
There's a way how to start. That's how to start.
You know, a little bit. Yeah,
like I could start with this. You get out. You start with that.
That's what he says to me. I feel right at home.
I love
but
him.
Back at back on the Cab Jazz topic here. What songs are we going to see out of you for sure tonight and Saturday and Sunday?
One of the things.
Or
that,
one of them. I'll
give you a couple. Somebody requested the I Love Lucy theme song, and I thought it was a joke, and being an idiot, you know. And then I looked it up, and it's like this great song. We remember it. Right. That's how we hear it. But it's I Love Lucy. And she loves me. We're as happy as two can be. La da 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 da. It's like this really cool jazz song, you know.
So there are lyrics in it.
Absolutely.
I remember, was it sung at all during the show?
I think Ricky sang it to Lucy at some point on the show. But that's the only time, because, yeah, I did not know there were lyrics, but there have been some pretty cool people recorded it. So I thought that was just kind of fun. We had a lot of requests for stuff like Hallelujah, which is something mm-hmm. I do, and 50 Ways to Leave Your Lover, and the thing from Paul Simon that you have always been, mm-hmm. you've always liked. We had, uh-huh. we had about 5 requests for that. Sometimes when we touch Dan Hill's song mm-hmm. from back in the 70s,
yeah.
which is a song I used to do, we had like 12 requests for that. Which,
who else recorded it? Who made that a hit?
I think Dan Hill made it a hit.
Was he the one who sang it?
Sometimes when we touch, right? So I think Dan Hill, I know Dan Hill wrote it, and I think I'm going to look it up.
I'm going to cheat here. I'm going to go into my lyric sheet. But that's one.
But that's definitely one that we're going to do. Jeff wrote a beautiful arrangement of that. We had a lot of requests for Jobim, bossa nova kind of things. So I just decided to pick one because I'm not going to do 8 bossa novas, you know. So the Bee Gees. We had requests for Bee Gees songs. So I'm going to do one. I'm doing How Deep Is Your Love. So you kind of have to look at it that way, that people obviously love the Bee Gees and Sinatra and the different things. And so rather than try to do them all, I thought, well, let's take one song from that subgroup and do that. So those are a few of them. I can't even remember everything we're doing now. But I'm also, because I have to multitask, you know, we're going to the Carlisle in New York in October. And so this is...
That's coming up.
That is really coming up.
Oh, man. That's a biggie.
And that's a biggie. Mm-hmm. And it's always a brand new show. So we're going to do about 6 things from that show, which will be the only time I do them on stage before I do them at the Carlisle in New York. So this is going to be about half the request and half of that.
Tell me about what it's like to perform in the Carlisle, because I'm going to go on this trip. I'm going to get the dates from you.
That's fantastic.
When are the dates?
We open the 1st of October, and that's when you should be there if you can.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, that's a Tuesday.
It's a Tuesday, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, what's it like to go back there? Because traditionally, and it might be a predisposed prejudice on my behalf about New York, because I think they have a predisposed, you know, prejudice against Vegas.
You're right.
Now, is that true? And what is it like stepping in there as somebody who's been in Las Vegas for 14 years or so?
I work pretty hard at what I do, but I think with New York, there's a whole it's its own animal. I mean, it really. Mm-hmm. And you're right. They do come to someone like me. I remember when Danny Gans played there. They look at us mm-hmm. as
they didn't like him.
Yeah, mm-hmm. those Vegas guys. Mm-hmm. And I always want to say, when's the last time you came to Vegas and saw what's going on here? You know, so we have worked really hard to make the show as sophisticated as possible, and yet really honest to who mm-hmm. I am and what I like to do. I think cabaret at its intrinsic place is part theater, and part musical.
I'm learning that as we observe you. There's a theatricality to these cabaret shows. It's not just somebody theatricality. And when people talk about you and they say he's a great interpreter of songs. Not just a singer of song, but somebody who's, you inhabit the song. And I think that's what probably, if I have the meter right here, is what resonates in New York.
I think so. I'll tell you a quick story. We mentioned Hallelujah, the song mm-hmm. Hallelujah. Hallelujah to me. They say there was a secret chord that David played and it pleased the Lord, but you don't really care for music, do you? That's the first mm-hmm. lyric. As I started to examine the song, I found a very personal relationship with that song. It's about, to me, that song is about my dad and I. To me, you could listen to it mm-hmm. and have a whole different thing, you know. But mm-hmm. to me, it's about my dad. When I found that, and I work with our friend Larry Moss on that.
Great acting coach.
Fantastic. When I found that and really examined it, okay. Mm-hmm. So that song became, to me, about my father. Okay, so I sing that in New York, and the New York Times writes, he sang the oft-sung Hallelujah, but there seemed to be a beginning, a middle, and an end, and a deeply personal attachment to the song.
Mm-hmm.
I went, okay. He got it. He didn't know what it was, but he understood what was going on in the song. And I think that that's the theatricality and the depth of the work you have to do to come into New York, in at least in those places, in whether you're going to Broadway or off Broadway or to the cabaret scene. They're looking for more than a nice suit and a good singer. Mm-hmm. They're really looking for an investment in the material, theatrically
that's
and emotionally.
Fair.
Yeah, and that's fair.
Mm-hmm. And it's a reputation that Las Vegas doesn't necessarily own.
Well, there it is. You know? But we're so it's derivative. Also not it's also not true. I mean, you could go hear Celine and Frankie and a whole bunch of people and go, well, there's some original thinking going on there. There's some original individual stuff. But that's why I want to say to them, have you been here lately and seen what's going on here?
Yeah, it's like they think every show has an Elvis impressionist in it. And there is a collection of tribute artists, which is, and they're fine. They're great.
Or the Rat Pack Revisited, you know, and which again, I love. But they go, and I get that. Mm-hmm. It's not original, and it's not personal, and it's not deep, and it's not theatrical. So that's where we have to go with these shows. So
well, you have to have a certain level of confidence to do what you do. And there's the best of the best do this. You do it, and Frankie, our friend Frankie Marino, also does this, and the Celines of the world. And that is having the confidence to do a song a little bit differently and take it down and trust the quiet a little bit.
Yeah.
Man, when you're there, and I've seen this happen with you guys, I use Bridge Over Troubled Water as an example. Both you and Frankie do terrific versions of it that are, and there's a there are moments when there's nothing happening.
Yeah,
and you got to be able to hang in there.
You have to trust that there. It's
how do you get to that level? I mean, to be able to whisper through the song
and to be able to not move. I mean, you know, I mean, I've learned that you want to fill the stage. We all do. We want to, and you don't want any silence. Oh my God, you know. Mm-hmm. But if you go and watch Tony Bennett, or if you examine Sinatra, or you know, you name him or her, the great ones, they will allow silence.
Mm-hmm.
Look, we're talking right now, and you know what I mean. And you went because you're thinking about something, and you're really listening to what I'm saying. So why wouldn't an audience? Why wouldn't we as artists give the audience that much credit that they will hang with us through the silence? And I think it's. Do you ever see? Of course, you have a movie. Let's pick a movie where Robert De Niro, his daughter is kidnapped, and he's looking for her, and he sees a glove, his daughter's glove. On the street, and he bends down and he picks it up, and they show a close up of his eyes, and that's all that's going on for 10, 15 seconds. We will stay with him as long as we believe and see that he is in that moment with that glove, with his daughter, thinking about it, the sadness, whatever it is. So as long as we as artists have something going on in the silence, the audience will stay with us.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting to bring this up because I'm becoming more aware of how pacing of shows work. Mm-hmm. I think if you've seen a lot of entertainers and see a lot of shows around, you understand what pacing's all about, and it's not an easy thing to attain. But I was interviewing a few months ago. I interviewed Teller, Penn and Teller.
Masters.
Yeah, and Teller is very articulate. Mm-hmm. He's a very articulate guy, and he's got an old frame of mind. He's an old school, you know, an old soul, as they say. You know, I had my digital recorder out. He called it my tape recorder. Uh-huh. You know, there was music coming into the room. So I need to turn the radio down. You know, that's how he is.
Yeah.
Very throwback. On stage, he never speaks, of course.
Right.
And I was asking him why that is. And he says there's an intensity about my silence that forces the audience to concentrate.
Wow.
You know, and I think unknowingly, I think that there is something to be said for that. Once you reach that level.
When you talk to somebody who talks like this, when they talk like this, you know, you lean in, you know, and I think that's a business technique. And I mean, I don't use it as a technique, but I use it when it feels right to me, when it feels right to whisper something. You know, if you're talking to someone you love, you're not going to, you know, and you're trying to be romantic, you're not going to yell at them. You know, you're going to talk in a certain tone. And if I'm singing a romantic song, I want to sing in that tone, you know?
Yeah.
So the closer to reality you can get, you know, and it does come with time and experience and confidence and studying. I mean, I study. I go to see as much as I can, and I learn from the bad, and I learn from the good. And once in a while, I see the great, and I just sit there and go, boy, that's it. That's it.
Can you rehearse that type of thing? Can you consciously rehearse with the guys? Wherever you do it, where do you guys rehearse?
We rehearse at Cabaret Jazz and at Jeff's house.
Jeff's house?
Yeah.
Do you take it down like that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that a good audience to do it with the guys?
Not an audience. They're playing, but I don't care.
I mean, is that a good group to do?
They're doing what I'm doing, which is learning this stuff, you know? I you know, will often take a song that I want to do and just read it and say the words, not sing the words, so that I kind of have an attachment to them as prose, So that when I sing it, I already know the story. And it's really important to know the story. Lena Horne, they say, would read a song 100 times before she would sing a note, because she wanted to know the story and internalize the story. She used to say, you can impersonate me, but you'll never know what I'm thinking.
Mm-hmm.
You can never know what I'm thinking.
And that goes back to reading lyrics and how the difference is, you know, it's more difficult to inhabit the song if you're...
Yeah, well, that's true too. Yeah. And even the songs I'm doing this weekend, although I will be reading lyrics, I know them.
Mm-hmm.
I know them. I'm just checking in.
It's a safety.
It's a safety
measure.
Thing. And I'm not going to try to hide it. I mean, you know, that's you know.
Well, I look at somebody like Barbara Streisand, a great interpreter of songs, and I saw her at MGM Grand Garden Arena. Yeah,
and they're on the damn wall. You know,
it's an LED screen. It's like the Jumbotron at the back of the room. Everybody in the arena practically knows what she's going to say before she says it.
Right.
And yet you're still with her.
Well, she's a genius. But they also say that has a confidence issue on stage, which is hard to believe, but that's what they say.
She masks it incredibly well.
She's so good. You know, yeah. I'll let her read whatever she wants.
Yeah, and it helps that she's surrounded by 150 people, too, up there on stage with her.
Yeah, yeah.
Tell me about how it is that this all fits into the cabaret jazz venue, what your approach is. I mean, you have a different type of show today than you did when you were at Harrah's and before that at Golden Nugget, you know, which are more showroom style shows, more, you know, a lot more brass, all, you know, a lot of brass and Santa Fe and the Fat City Horns were the band.
Yeah.
And tell me about that transition. Are you today where you felt like you would be when you signed on with Cabaret Jazz artistically and in terms of your business?
I honestly, the last year and a half, 2 years, it represents a huge shift for me. I have to look at the reality and of my career, you know, as we all do, and the real two worlds. Well, there are flukes and there are things that happen. We all know that, you know, TV show, something can happen. But the two real things that I can do are record in a jazz based world, and do theater, you know, and I'm talking about something that takes me to another level that I want to be at. So what Cabaret Jazz has allowed me to do is to really experiment with those things, especially the jazz stuff, you know. I'm working with Greg Field, who is won like 10 Grammy Awards, Arturo Sandoval, Herbie Hancock, Patty Austin, all those people produced them, and Shelley Berg, who just produced the new Gloria Estefan CD that's just coming out now, and we're working on a CD together. I'm going back and forth to LA, and they would not be interested in me if I came to them and said I want to compete with Jay-Z or Justin Timberlake, you know. I have to be in a world that it is real for me, and that world has to do with jazz. You know, it doesn't have to be esoteric jazz, you know, because jazz is someone said to me, define jazz, you know, I'm like you know,
you can't dance to it,
you can't dance to it, right? So anyway, so cabaret jazz has given me a chance to really experiment and grow in that world, and those are my next steps, I think.
All right, well, we're going to be there this weekend. I probably will see you there tomorrow night, it looks like.
Oh good, tomorrow night will be good.
We'll have done
it once. Oh yeah, and that too.
I've yet to really successfully rush the stage at your show, but opportunity knocks tomorrow night at Cabaret Jazz. It's the great Clint Holmes, ladies and gentlemen, doing a lot of requests that he has collected in social media and in person and on the phone and in text at Cabaret Jazz tonight, Saturday, and Sunday. Check him out. He's there the first weekend of each month, and he is one of our treasures. Thanks again, Clint, for coming down here.
Always good seeing you, man.